G-76, Gravesen Hotel, Buenos Aires, Argentina. John Coles, senior security officer, bounded forward to the very edge of the Gravesen Hotel's vast exclusion zone, conversing in impressively fluent Spanish with some of the police officers who looked as surprised as anyone would have been by their unscheduled visitor. Cole didn't know what was being said. English was the language of the world in his eyes, and it always both would and should be. But it didn't take a polyglot to interpret the laughter of the Argentine police or the body language of his guard. Moments later, the man was back at Cole's side. "All good, boss," he said. "We can stay." Only then did Cole consider that there had ever been a modicum of doubt that this was the case, but even in retrospect, he didn't think it was ever a real concern. There was no way the police officers would have wanted to cause any kind of scene before the world's cameras, let alone a diplomatic incident on the day of the ICA's inauguration. The recent rise to global prominence of Argentina and Buenos Aires in particular, which owed everything first to the country's unwitting role in Richard Walker's hoax and later to William Godfrey's decision to base his Global Space Commission in the building that had since been repurposed more than once, was a source of both great pride and great economic benefit for locals. No one wanted to cause problems to the visiting dignitaries who kept the wheels turning, and least of all the police.
"What a turnout," Cole beamed. "It's great to see you all. I heard the noise, looked out my window, and, well, wow."
It took no time at all for a wave of humanity to rush forward from the nearest edge of the procession. Cole saw an incredible number of t-shirts sporting the mimetic "now, now, now" and "ahora, ahora, ahora" slogans of old, popularized by Emma Ford's Now movement in the days when demonstrations even larger than this one had ground major cities to a halt, as citizens demanded an admission from President Slater that Dan McCarthy's leak was legitimate and that successive American governments had been suppressing proof of alien visitation for decades. The tone of those protests had been relatively tame, with some being as peaceful as today's demonstration, and the message of the respective marchers wasn't as different as may have first appeared to be the case. Back then, the call had been for openness, and the implication had been that past alien visitation, and indeed future contact, would likely be net positive events for humanity and Earth as a whole. Now that the messengers were a part of everyday reality, and had consistently shown themselves to be peaceful and trustworthy friends, the message from today's marchers was that deepening cooperation between Earth and New Kerguelen was something to be celebrated and pursued rather than feared and pushed aside.
"I knew you were coming by, but I didn't know exactly when," Cole went on, addressing no one in particular but preempting the otherwise inevitable comment that the route had been announced well in advance and that no one would be stupid enough to think he didn't know. "And I certainly had no idea of the scale," he continued with a wide and convincingly warm-looking smile. "This is incredible, seeing so many of you out on the street in support of something good rather than in desperate opposition to something undesirable. The ICA is exactly what our planet has been waiting for, and any questions about the suitability of its leadership shouldn't be allowed to cloud that on a day like today. I'm glad the headlines are all about the positive public reaction shown in marches like this, rather than the simmering discontent at the ICA itself, and long may that continue."
As the flashes on several phones flashed unnecessarily, and thousands of digital shutter-click sound effects filled the air, Cole posed for them all at once while waiting for the questions that were sure to be coming. 3, 2.
"What discontent at the ICA?" asked an American-sounding female reporter who Cole didn't recognize.
The woman thrust an oversized and woolly-looking microphone across the security barrier once her question was out, as far as her hand would allow. She held it in Cole's general direction. Cole waved his hand dismissively.
"Oh, I didn't mean much by that turn of phrase. I didn't have a speech ready for this or anything, so you'll have to excuse me if some of my words here are a little less precise than would normally be the case. All I meant was that the past 3 weeks haven't been easy for Chairman Godfrey or CPL McCarthy's deputies.
We now know that Chairman Godfrey opted to keep the discovery of a second shelter on New Kerguelen quiet for reasons which will hopefully become apparent later today, but the potential nature of those reasons could cause the leadership all kinds of problems.
What exactly do you mean? The reporter pushed. She was by now utterly surrounded, as every other attendant cameraman and reporter jostled for a premium position near Prime Minister Cole. The images being captured by the cameras immediately in front of Cole showed him and just a few security staff standing in an otherwise deserted area full of trees and decorative objects. The scene was unique, if nothing else, but lacked a certain punch. The contrasting framing of some side-on photographs taken from either end of the snaking line of demonstrators, on the other hand, was far more spectacular, showing as it did Cole alone on one side of the exclusion zone, but also catching the preceding marchers in the distance behind his shoulder. Cole had also quite firmly encouraged some relatively junior members of his own security staff to take photographs from behind him with the enormous crowd looming in. This angle, he hoped, would show him as a man of the people who wasn't afraid to quite literally stand alone and say his piece while most of his international counterparts were already puckering up to kiss Godfrey's arse just a few miles down the road. After spending the next few minutes replying to fairly gentle questions with fairly gentle answers, Cole began to drop in some slightly sharper comments about Godfrey's leadership credentials, by way of referencing some little-known controversies that had caused problems at the UN in the past year without quite making the press. None of Cole's jabs were overt, but they were clear enough to ensure they would be picked up by studio anchors even though they seemed to be going over the heads of the reporters on the ground. This was, in fact, perfect for the Prime Minister's current purposes, as it allowed him to land a few plausibly deniable jabs without having to navigate any explicit questions about his relationship with the ICA chairman. As he continued speaking and felt this successful outing drawing to a natural end, Cole came to a decision as to which of his three pre-penned interjection speeches he would lean upon when he unceremoniously crashed Godfrey's party in just a few short hours. The main lesson John Cole had learned in his relatively short but endlessly explosive career in frontline politics, this one taught by experience rather than Godfrey or anyone else in particular, was that timing was everything. For weeks, he had opted to stay tactfully quiet as his fury at being left in the lurch by Godfrey grew and grew. On countless occasions, since the embarrassing moment when he was informed of the second shelter by a smug British news reporter, Cole had woken up in the middle of the night with an urge to make Godfrey's life as difficult as he could. At times, forcing him out of the ICA so that he could step in to fill the void didn't even feature in his mind as a driving objective. When it came to Godfrey, Cole cared far more about knocking his former ally from his smug little perch than he did about where he himself would end up afterwards. Indeed, as the high-risk nature of his planned interruption at the inauguration gala might have suggested, Cole gave far less thought to the effect on his own reputation than to delivering a long-overdue pie in Godfrey's face. John Cole had plans for the ICA. He had plans for Earth as a whole, and most secretly of all, he had plans for even further afield. All of these were in his mind almost all of the time, and in moments of clarity, he recognized that there was a certain way to make Godfrey pay for his sins without burning himself in the process. In the light of day, he knew he would act with these considerations in mind. After running on autopilot for a few more minutes, Cole thanked the reporters nearest him and told them that he had to get going to take his place at the ICA ahead of the imminent inauguration. The number of demonstrators who cheered and applauded as he waved massively outnumbered those who jeered and heckled, which brought a smile to Cole's face as he began to walk back towards the hotel. That seemed like it went well, his security chief offered.
It did, Cole said. Thanks for your diligent service.
With a spring in his step and completely oblivious to any of the day's events in Birchwood, Ankara, or indeed Dan McCarthy's office at the ICA, Cole hurried back to get ready for the big day ahead. Finally, the time for his biggest play of all, one he had shared with no one, was almost here.
Many men had underestimated John Cole, but he was going to do everything in his power to see to it that William Godfrey would be the last.